Chapter 6. Paradise. With a squeaky noise, the big doors started opening. The kids could hardly contain their excitement, but Uncle Louis insisted they stay calm. The tunnel ramp was only big enough for two people to walk side by side. It was dark to begin with, as there were only tiny lights along the floor to guide their way. The ramp sloped steeply upwards, and at the top, bright rays of light shone through. Uncle Louis led the children, breathing heavily as he tramped upward. Holding hands, Amy and Georgia giggled nervously. Small Charlie and timid, shy Milan were right behind them. Charlie started singing the new song, and soon most of the kids were singing Amy's song all the way up the tunnel. When they reached the top of the ramp, they could see lots of bright green straight ahead through the open doors. Everyone walked quickly toward the shining light. As much as Amy had been dreaming about paradise, nothing had prepared her for how beautiful it truly was. Once she got to the entrance, she stopped walking and stared open-mouthed in absolute astonishment. All the eager children behind her pushed her forward into the orchards. Even Rosa had a look of elation on her face. Amy found a spot away from everyone else, and with a rapturous look, she stretched her arms out and soaked in the beauty. She could see the bay, as they here called it. Light sparkled on the calm blue surface. A few brown speckled ducks were floating on top. One suddenly went headfirst into the water and waved its little webbed feet in the air. For one anxious moment, Amy thought it was drowning. But then all the others did the same thing, and the first duck bobbed back up with something in its beak. Ponsy, Damien, Lima, and Franz had been dreaming about the water. They tore off their new vests and shirts and went dashing down to the lake. Uncle Louis followed them anxiously, repeating his warnings. There was no school scheduled for the first day in the new world. However, within a few minutes, it became obvious that swimming lessons had to start right away. Although Uncle Louis had never swum himself, the numerous YouTube videos he'd watched had given him a general idea of what to do. Plunging into the water with the boys, Uncle Louis tried to teach them how to float while he experimented himself. It was a brand new adventure for them all. Wiry Ponsy didn't want to listen and nearly drowned in the first few minutes. Damien pulled him out just in time. Amy wasn't sure about swimming. Seeing Ponsy nearly drown and Uncle Louis struggling to keep his head above water, she decided it looked rather dangerous. She would rather explore. Turning her attention to the green field in front of her, Amy was quite proud that she knew what it was. "This is grass," she said out loud. "I know," Georgia laughed. Uncle Louis had shown them a picture book about children going to a farm. Looking up, Amy saw the cow and sheep were eating the grass, just like they did in the farm book. She reached down and tried some, but she wasn't impressed. She spat it out. Georgia and Vanitha giggled. "You're not a cow," they teased. Amy made a face and twirled around in the field, singing, "I'm not a cow. I'm so glad to be me." Behind the field, the hills rose up, lined with trees, lots of pretty green trees. Two colorful birds with bright blue, green, and red feathers flew through the air effortlessly, narrowly missing Amy's head. Amazed, she watched them flap their little wings and glide up and down. "How do they do that?" she marveled out loud. Flapping her arms wildly, she ran forward, even though Uncle Louis had told her that only birds and insects could fly. "Oh, how I would love to soar all around like that," she sighed happily. The birds were soon out of sight, heading toward the rock cliff, which stood above the hills on either side. It had a big plateau on top. "Maybe I can climb up there," Amy thought, feeling this would be the second best to flying. In the distance, she spotted the shapes of two deer standing on the cliff. Startled by all the noise the children were making, they suddenly turned and ran off. "Oh, I hope I can make friends with them," Amy said. All around her were trees loaded with colorful fruit. Seeing the gardens filled with many flowers like those Uncle Louis had tried to draw for them in the nursery, Vanitha rushed to examine them more closely. She discovered they were so much prettier than his drawings, and the roses smelled wonderful. "Ooh, I love them! I want to pick them! I want to smell them!" she called out. Amy rushed over to admire the colorful flowers with her friend. Charlie, Nancy, and a lot of the girls followed close behind her, laughing and shouting, rolling in the grass, picking the flowers, and touching every new thing. They were all so happy to be in the new world. Coming to the edge of the garden, the girls looked back to see that Zahir, Vahid, and Milan were testing the fruit in the orchard. The sunshine gleamed on the boys. "Look how white Milan and Vahid are compared to Zahir," Georgia marveled out loud. She looked down at her own skin. "And I'm white, too." Comparing arms, Amy decided she was golden. Santa clapped her hands and swayed her hips from side to side. "And I'm dark brown," she exulted. Vanitha laughed. "I'm right in between." "I love all the different colors that we are," Amy exclaimed. Together, Amy, Vanitha, Nancy, Santa, and Charlie explored the fields. They tried to catch the beautiful butterflies. They discovered two friendly puppies and a mischievous kitten in the meadow. Even a few sweet rabbits peeked out of the grass. Charlie fell in love with the small brown puppy with a white stripe down her muzzle. He picked her up and cuddled her. The puppy licked Charlie's round face and even his brown hair. He laughed out loud. "I'm calling her Maxie," he told the girls. "She's cute like you," Santa smiled. With a look of surprise, Charlie laughed again. "What do you mean?" "You're both small and you have cute faces," Santa teased. "It's a compliment," Amy assured him. "Okay," Charlie shrugged, rolling his eyes. "We're both cute," he told Maxie. Nancy picked up the little orange-striped kitten hiding in the grass. "This will be Ripple then," she said happily. Uncle Louie had read them a story about a puppy called Maxie and a kitten called Ripple. Unused to contact, the kitten hissed and stuck out her claws. "She's not so friendly," Nancy observed. For a minute, she tried to keep Ripple in her arms, but the scratches deterred her from continuing. She let Ripple jump down and watched her run up the tree with the bright red fruit. "I'm going to make you like me," she promised the kitten. The other puppy saw Zahir and his friends eating the fruit and went bounding over to them. "A puppy!" Zahir called out eagerly. Kneeling down, he opened his arms wide and wrapped them around the wriggling golden pup. "Oh, I want him," he said. Charlie held up his puppy. "I called this one Maxie," he said. "What are you going to call yours?" Lifting the big puppy off the ground, Zahir was surprised that the dog wouldn't stop licking his face. He conferred with Vahid and Milan about names. Amy could hear them suggest, "Flicker? Goldie?" "Let's just make something up," Zahir said at last. "Let's call him Fredo." His friends laughed, but they didn't disagree. "We're going to call him Fredo," Zahir announced to the girls, lowering his puppy to the ground. He and the boys took off for the lake with Fredo right at their heels. Amy had noticed the fruit the boys were sampling. "Look at those pretty red things," she said. "Let's try them." Picking some for herself and her friends, they all tried them and were enthralled. "I think there are pears," Nancy remarked, "or was it lemons? Do you remember reading that book on fruit?" The red balls were sweet, juicy, and crunchy. "I think they are apples," Santa piped up. "Whatever they are, this is so much better than grass, or even Wonder Drink," Amy exclaimed. Santa did a little wriggling dance of delight. "I love them," she cheered. They all agreed. Vanitha looked up to see that Rosa, Tina, and Yuyan were climbing the hill nearby, and she dashed off to catch up with her friends. "Let's climb the highest hill," Charlie suggested excitedly, looking in the opposite direction and seeing there was already someone else standing on top. It took at least 10 minutes to reach the cliff, and even longer to climb. But with Maxie bounding eagerly behind, they finally reached the plateau. There was no longer anyone else on top, but they could see Kenzie walking up the rounded bare hill beside them. "We can see the whole world from here," Nancy said in awe. All four stood looking out across paradise. They could see all the hills and the farmland and even down into the forest. They could see clearly to the other side where Rosa, Tina, and Vanitha were exploring the hill near the tunnel entrance beside the orchards and farmland. "I can even see the swimmers in the bay," Amy called out. "They haven't gone far," Santa observed. "Everyone is still close to shore." "Just to let you know," Charlie wisely informed Amy, "it's not a bay. Uncle Louie says it's a lake." "Oh," Amy replied, looking disappointed. "But lake doesn't rhyme." "Swimming looks hard," Nancy said. "I don't think I want to learn." "We all have to learn," Charlie reminded her. "Swimming is going to be our first school lesson tomorrow." Nancy made a face. Looking in the opposite direction, she was excited to see a large rectangular building. "Look, there's a store that Uncle Louie told us about." The store sat down in a valley beside a train track. As he turned to look, a sharp whistle made them all jump. The train was coming in. "Did the train make that noise?" Amy asked. "Of course," Charlie replied. Nancy clapped her hands together eagerly. "I wonder what's on it," she called out. "Let's go see," Santa cheered. Picking Maxie up in his arms, Charlie ran down the hill with the girls. Built out of wooden building boards and hot glue, the store was fairly long. It had a slanted roof that covered the large deck all around. They couldn't get inside as the doors were locked. A sign on the window said, "Storekeepers needed." The children looked inside the window. There were many shelves full of items. There were lengthy wooden planks and plenty of toothpicks and blue tack, just like they had used in the nursery to make forts. Charlie pointed out the wooden box filled with fruits and vegetables, just like they had seen in the picture books. "Oh, I would love to be the storekeeper," Nancy exclaimed. "Really?" Amy asked, looking up at her friend in surprise. Amy did not want to be stuck inside a building every day. Yet eyeing her friend thoughtfully, she recalled that Nancy loved to organize things. Tall and sturdy, with her long brown hair tied back in a tight braid, Nancy wore a plain white dress devoid of ribbons. "I think you'll make a very good storekeeper," Amy said. Charlie and Santa agreed. Quite certain that she would, Nancy clapped her hands together. "Yes," she agreed. "It would be so fun to keep it all tidy and hand stuff out to everyone." "Let's look inside the train," Charlie suggested. The girls looked at him uneasily. "Should we?" Amy asked. "Why not?" Charlie replied. The train doors slid open easily. Inside were all the little beds from the nursery piled high with everyone's belongings. "Where are we all going to sleep tonight?" Charlie asked suddenly, his blue eyes full of concern. The girls looked at him blankly. They hadn't given this any thought. "Maybe we should find a place," Nancy suggested. "Then we can set up everyone's beds and have them ready." "Good idea," Charlie agreed. They looked around for a cozy place. "How about in the meadow?" Charlie said. "Oh, yes," Santa agreed. "But the cow might step on us," Amy objected. "Down by the lake might be nice."
It's too far to carry everything," Charlie argued.
"The store has a big flat part all around it," Nancy observed.
"That's a deck," Charlie said.
Amy looked at the deck and the roof that stretched over it. Having been used to sleeping in a cozy rectangular room, this seemed like a good substitution.
"Yes," she nodded. "I think this is the best place to put the beds. Then we can all be together."
The others agreed and began pulling out the wooden box beds, helping each other to carry them one by one. They set up a girls' section on one side of the deck and a boys' section on the other. Uncle Louie's bed was positioned right in the middle. They were really hungry when they had finished the job.
"How do we get food?" Amy wondered.
Thankfully, Uncle Louie arrived, wet and bedraggled, with four waterlogged boys in tow, wearing only their knee-length pants. Zaheer and his friends were following a short distance behind, and Zaheer had the golden-haired puppy in his arms.
"Well done," Uncle Louie praised, seeing all the beds laid out. "This will be a good place to sleep tonight."
With a pleased expression, he looked at the three children who had set up the sleeping quarters. "Thank you for organizing us all," he said. "Eventually, we'll start building homes, so we will each have our own shelters."
"We get to build homes?" Charlie repeated. "Anywhere we want?"
"Of course," Uncle Louie replied. "This is your world. Everyone gets to make a home where they would like to live." All the Tunnies looked up, some with alarm and others with excitement.
"Can't we all stay together?" Amy asked, twisting her hands nervously.
Santa pleaded,
"Can we live with you, Uncle Louie?"
"Can I too?" Zaheer begged. Georgia, Lily, Rosa, Vahid, and Milan all wanted the same. Uncle Louie smiled kindly, seeing the wild-eyed children. Close by Zaheer, he tousled his dark curly hair. "You will all be very safe here in paradise," he assured them. "But if you want to build a big house and live together, that is fine by me. Although," he paused, looking around awkwardly, "for now girls will live with girls and boys with boys." No one protested this arrangement. Amy and Santa clasped hands.
"We're together," Santa said, "and we get Uncle Louie."
Uncle Louie smiled, but he didn't commit. Georgia dashed over to cling onto Amy's arm.
"Me too," she declared.
"I want to be in the meadow," Charlie said without hesitation. His puppy barked and he laughed, "and so does Maxie." Vahid and Kenzie chose to be with Charlie. Yu Yan, Rosa, and Vanitha linked arms. Tina ran over to them.
"Beach for me," Damien and Lima called out in unison, and then they looked at each other and laughed. "I'll take the highest hill," Ponzi announced.
"But I want it," Odin shouted, his pale blue eyes suddenly intense.
"I said it first."
Odin pushed Ponzi, and Ponzi tried to push back. Odin was bigger and heavy-boned, while Ponzi was lean and very wiry.
As they began a shoving match, Uncle Louis strode over and pulled them apart. "Boys, cut it out," Uncle Louis said sternly. "This is a big world. There's room for everyone. You can both have a house on the hill. You're friends, remember?" The two boys glared at each other. "I get the flat side," Ponsy whispered. Odin was about to argue when Amy's stomach growled loudly. Everyone laughed. "How do we get food?" Amy asked politely. "I am so hungry." Everyone began complaining about how hungry they were. Uncle Louis held up his hands. "Calm down, everyone," he said. "There will always be food available. You saw the fruit on the trees, and the professor has never let us down." Reaching into his pocket for a key, Uncle Louis unlocked the door. "For now, we are able to help ourselves to food in here. But once we get storekeepers..." "Oh, I want to be a storekeeper," Nancy piped up. "Great," Uncle Louis replied with a smile. "We'll let you try it out and see if you like it. And once we have everything sorted, we'll trade for food." "What does that mean?" Ponsy asked. "You all need to bring something to the store to trade for meals and whatever you need," Uncle Louis clarified. "Like what?" Damien asked, shaking back his wet, straggly blonde hair. "What would we bring?" "Well, if you want to live by the water," Uncle Louis replied, "then you might like to catch some fish and bring them to be cooked for breakfast or to trade for fruits or vegetables." "I want to grow vegetables," Charlie smiled proudly. "So maybe I'll trade my vegetables for breakfast fish?" "Exactly," Uncle Louis replied, leading them all into the store. "Or someone could pick some flowers or make some furniture. There's even a little bakery here in the store, and somebody might like to learn how to make bread. We will all find something that we can do well and use that to trade." "What will you bring?" Ponsy asked Uncle Louis. "My work is to look after all of you and teach you school lessons," Uncle Louis chuckled. "So I will trade work for food." "Oh, this looks fun," Amy called out, walking around the kitchen. It was a square room with gleaming metal shelves and counters equipped with bowls and spoons, bags that said flour, and several other supplies. A large metal sink sat in front of a big window that looked out toward the treeless hill. The sink had taps, and Amy ran over to see if water would come out. It did. The taps worked just like they had in the nursery. A tall metal box was positioned against a wall. It had a big door that opened and several black knobs. On top were four round black spirals. "That is the oven," Uncle Louis told her. "We will be able to bake our bread in there." "What does bread taste like?" "I'm not sure," Uncle Louis laughed, "but I've heard it's something we will want to eat every day." Then Ponsy saw the Wonder Drink machine behind the store counter and bounded over. "Hey, Wonder Drink is here!" "Yes, for a little while longer, you can all have Wonder Drink," Uncle Louis said, quickly walking over to stand in front of the machine before Ponsy could help himself. "But first, everyone needs to try at least one delicious vegetable or fruit." Suddenly he remembered something important. "Actually, now that we are in the real world, we must always wash our hands before we eat." "Why?" Ponsy asked. "Because we may have touched something like dirt or harmful bacteria that can make us sick if it gets into our mouths. You don't want to get sick. You'll feel awful. So go wash your hands with soap and water, use the sink here or the one by the outhouse." There was a mad dash to the kitchen sink. The outhouse was much further away. Everyone washed, although some did it more carefully than others. When Amy's hands were clean, she picked up a carrot and bit into it. "Ooh, it's so crunchy and sweet," she said. All the other kids chose from the wooden box, and almost everyone chose more than one delicious treat before running over to get their cup of Wonder Drink. Fahid couldn't get enough carrots. Having filled up with nourishment, the children ran outside to continue their exploration and pick the best spot for their future home. Soon the remaining stragglers heard that food was to be found in the store, and they came running in to get lunch. Amy, Georgia, and Santa found the outhouse, which was another wooden building tucked in at the base of a forested hill. There was a girl's side which said, "Girls," very clearly, and a boy's side that said, "Boys." Just like in the nursery, each side had a couple of small private rooms with a round hole and a smooth plank. The holes went way, way down. Opening all the doors on the girl's side curiously, Amy found the third door open to a shower. She turned the taps and found it worked just like the one in the nursery. Drenched, she came out, told her friends, and then, of course, they too had to try it. Outside the outhouse, attached to the wall, was a large metal sink with running water and soap. After using the new outhouse and washing their hands, the girls explored paradise for the rest of the afternoon. It was so exciting to dip their toes in the lake, to feel the sand, climb the trees, pick the flowers, and stand up high on top of the hills. As the three girls tromped through the orchards, eating apples and talking about where they might live, Amy confessed,
I hope Uncle Louie decides to live with us.
Let's build a really big house with a room just for him. Santa and Georgia agreed. I'm glad we're all sleeping on the deck tonight, Santa added. I hope it takes a long time to build houses. Georgia was glad as well, but she was also intrigued about living together. When we do build a house, she prodded, where do you want to build it? How about in the meadow with the beautiful gardens all around us? Santa suggested, waving her arms toward the farmland. I was thinking the hill might be nice, Georgia said slowly. Not Odin and Ponce's hill, but a smaller one. Yes, a hill, Amy nodded. Then we can wake up in the morning and look across a sparkling lake. Georgia laughed, and see what is going on all across paradise, she added. Which hill? Santa asked. Amy stood still and looked toward the hills. The tallest hill in the middle had already been claimed by Odin and Ponce. There was a hill on either side of the rocky cliff. One was grassy and rounded, but without trees. The other was forested and close to the lake. It wasn't hard to choose. Let's try the hill with the forest, she suggested. When they climbed to the top, Lily and Dia were already sitting on the grass admiring the view. Do you want to live with us in one great big house? Georgia asked. Sure, Lily replied. Only if I get a room of my own, Dia insisted. Of course, Georgia agreed, her green eyes glowing with the idea. We'll all have our own rooms, but we'll also be together. The girls ran around on top of the hill looking for the best place to build. They considered several spots. Near the edge of the hill on the large clearing, on the side of the hill in the trees, or right on top and far from the edge, or on the other side which looked out towards the store. Eventually, they settled on the very top, far from the edge. We will have a great view of the lake and the pretty gardens, Amy raved. This is exactly where I want to live. Hey, look, there's Sahira Milan, Georgia pointed out. I think they are picking a spot near us. Amy looked out in the direction Georgia was pointing. The boys were standing in the trees, not far away. She saw Zahir's puppy, Fredo, looking up at her, wagging his tail. I guess they want to be cozy in the forest, she surmised. How nice! They will be our closest neighbors. They'll have almost the same view of the lake, Lily observed. By the time everyone returned to the store to get their wonder drink that evening, they all had ideas of where they wanted to live. Most planned to live in groups of two or more, and everyone was happy with their choices except for Odin and Ponce. They were still arguing about who would get the flat part of the cliff.
You should build a house together like the rest of us, Sahira remarked to Ponce.
Odin stamped his foot. No way! Ponce shrugged. I'm not sharing a house with him. He snores. Uncle Louie made a suggestion. If you both want the flat part and you don't think you can share a house, then we will set up a contest to win it. Why not see who can pin the other to the ground for the longest, Odin said, folding his arms across his chest. That's a good contest. It's not exactly a fair contest, Uncle Louie smiled. Come up with a fair suggestion that won't hurt anyone and I'll consider it. After a dinner of Wonder Drink, the sky began turning the most fantastic pink and purple colors. Most of the other Tinies were tired out and snuggling into their small beds, but not Amy. She had enjoyed her day so much that she longed to express her happiness. As she climbed the hill that she and the girls had chosen, she kept looking up at the sky in awe and occasionally stumbling over little stones and plants she didn't see. Uncle Louie had showed them a sunset in a book, but the colors she saw above surpassed her expectations. However, she hadn't expected the black crisscross pattern. In the book, the sky had been an uninterrupted expanse, and Amy didn't know that she was inside a house of glass. Oh, I wish I could thank Evan and the professor, she whispered as the pink became even more intense. She wondered if Evan might be looking into the nursery windows, and for a moment, she imagined herself running back down the tunnel to thank him, but she knew the tunnel doors were closed tight. Will I ever see Evan again? She asked herself wistfully. I should have asked him that question yesterday.
Looking up again at the glowing crisscross sky, she walked right into a tree branch. Undeterred, she pushed it away. What does the professor look like? She thought. Will I ever meet him? He's the mastermind of paradise, she marveled. In her mind, she could picture Evan well, but the professor was just a blank spot with a very important label.
must be so incredibly amazing to make this beautiful world. I would love to meet him. She sighed and asked herself, how do I thank them?
When she reached the top of the hill and stood where her house was going to be, the colors faded and the sky turned a deep blue. To her amazement, little white lights flickered on and off all around her. Fireflies, she said in awe. They are real. Down below in the lake, the loons cried out. Their stirring cry made her thankfulness overflow. Oh, if only I could give Evan a hug, she thought wistfully, her hands folded together over her heart. I want to tell him I love paradise. A little tune began blossoming inside. Standing on the hill under blue sundress, Amy hummed and twirled, enjoying the way the ribbons floated and wrapped around her. Then she began adding words to the tune.
I just want to say thank you for today and every special way you have made the bay and places for us to play. I love you all away.
Once again, the song came together really well until the last line. She wanted to end with thank you for the world, but Sahir is right, she considered. The last line needs to rhyme with all the others. Up on the hill, as the light faded, and she could see the large, luminous moon appearing in the sky, Amy tried over and over to get the last line right. Finally, she decided to sing,
thank you for the world. Thank you, thank you, thank you for today.
It changed the rhythm a little, but she felt it expressed the deep gratitude that was in her heart. I love you, Evan, she declared, holding her arms up to the sky. And you too, Professor, she added wistfully, just in case they were listening. I just love, love, love this wonderful world you've made. Amy was unaware that the professor and Evan were sitting together on the other side of the frosted glass with tears in their eyes. Little Amy's song was the perfect ending to the delightful day they had spent watching the Tinies discover paradise. They had heard every comment and squeal of happiness through the microphone hidden under the school roof. The new world was as perfect as they had hoped, and neither one of them had anticipated such a grateful song.
Ooh la la. Not bad for a 10-month-old, the professor murmured gruffly to Evan. She has a lovely voice. Not bad at all, Evan whispered, taking another picture on his phone. It just makes everything we've done so worthwhile. What a sweetie. She is a special child, the professor smiled proudly. And while she is the only one who has actually said thank you, it's been so rewarding seeing all the delighted looks on everyone's face. I'm glad you took hundreds of pictures. Today was certainly worth every year of research and construction, Evan added softly as he scrolled through his photos. Even giving up your entire summer vacation? Best summer ever. Good. I'll see you in the halls tomorrow. Yes, you will, Evan replied quietly, rising from his chair and stretching his tall frame. And so far, looks like everything is working well, but I'll try to check on things in the morning. Louis can reach me if anything goes wrong, Professor Lemenz reminded him in a hushed tone, pulling out his cell phone to look at his messages. Don't worry too much if you can't get in before your classes are over. Okay, I'll see you tomorrow, Evan smiled. He turned back for one last look into the dome. Little Amy was making her way down the hill in the moonlight to the small wooden beds on the deck. Good night, children, Evan whispered, knowing full well that they wouldn't and shouldn't hear him. Willie was happy to see them in paradise. He was sad he could no longer communicate with them directly. Have a nice sleep, everyone, he said softly. Checking the monitor to ensure there was no one around in the staff parking lot, Evan took the easy one-way exit. Accessible only to them, it was the quickest way out of the paradise room, bypassing all elevators, locked doors, and time-consuming key codes. Had there still been a number of people milling about the cars, he could have chosen to exit through the viewing hall, coming out the professor's private door. But at night, the one-way exit was the easiest.